Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, Associate Editor Teresa O'Halloran interviews Jeff Yeager from University of Cincinnati. Their topic is about creativity in counselor education.
Well, welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Teresa O'Halloran, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Jeff Yeager from the University of Cincinnati. And Jeff is going to speak to us today about creativity in counselor education. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
So I'm looking forward to this. Good. I'm looking forward to this conversation. So I wonder if you would start with telling us a little bit about your background.
It's interesting. I was just talking to somebody yesterday at the North Central Association for Counselor Education and Supervision Conference, and they were asking, well, gee, how long have you been in this field? And if I count the beginning of my master's program, it's now 40 years.
Oh, my.
Because I started my master's in 1966.
Uh-huh.
And this being 2006, that's 40 years. Actually, in the counselor education area, I have been a counselor educator since 1972. I taught for 1 year as a doctoral student at Michigan State when I was there, and then 2 years at the University of North Dakota following graduation. And since that time, which would be 1975 to the present, I've been at the University of Cincinnati. And probably some other couple of things that would be relevant and of interest. My primary teaching area has been within the practicums, at least for the last 15 or 20 years. I teach the practicum sequence for beginning counseling students, and then the doctoral course on supervision to not only teach people about supervision, but get help with those practicum students who are in the beginning classes. And that's pretty much an overview of my background in the counselor education area.
Mm-hmm. So that's your professional background, and mm-hmm. I wonder where your interest in creativity came from.
You know, that's a really good question, because I think what it is that years ago, as I was starting, you know, I think it was even before I started teaching, it was in my master's program, I remember one of my instructors, and I don't remember which class it was in, was talking about experience. And his major point was, and he said it, if he said it once, he said it 10 times during the course of the class, is that if you're going into an area of teaching, you really should be focusing not on getting 25, 30 years of experience. It should be within the context of each year of experience is additional learning beyond the first. So it was rather than have 1 year of teaching repeated 25 or 30 times, you truly do have your 25 years of experience built one on top of the next. And in doing that, I think you have to be creative, because part of the process of avoiding burnout, avoiding getting tired of doing the same thing again and again, is doing it differently every time. And I think we've got a field that in counseling that clearly allows that sort of thing, because we typically are going to get to know students on a much more directly personal level than many purely academic fields. That you can't help a counselor become a counselor without helping them get to know themselves, look at themselves in different ways, ask questions, grow. In some other academic fields, it's possible just for the student to come in, gain the academic knowledge, repeat that in a variety of theses and papers and tests, and graduate without necessarily ever forcing them to look at themselves and change. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that as a counselor in training. It has to be a self-change process as one goes through the program. And of course, for the faculty member, that means we are going to be getting to know that student in a personal way that ensures that we can't have 1 year of teaching experience repeated 25 times. It's got to be different every single time because the students are different, their background is different, their experiences prior to coming in are going to be different, and it would be hard in some senses to be not other than creative in the teaching of counseling. You can't take the same notes that you wrote 25 years ago and deliver those to each subsequent class. Since I'm teaching practicum, there's no way you could even approach that, but if I was teaching counseling theories exclusively over the past 30 years, I don't even think I could do that because there's too much interaction that is essential for the learning of the counseling student. So every class is new, every class is different, and to keep that going, there's an essence of creativity in everything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I probably just expanded on that a little bit more with goofy stuff. Goofy creativity. Keeps the students interested.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, you've expanded in ways. Well, you keep it fresh each year with this new perspective, but on top of that, you're using more creative skills that I think some counselor educators would be wondering, how do I do that? And what is, how do I keep it so interesting and vibrant, for our students? So I look forward to learning about that here. So what are some examples about how you use creativity?
Probably the primary examples is an effort that I consistently make to bring in something that's at least unexpected. And there really are a number of things that relate to that. One simple element of that is you don't just show the perfect counselor doing the excellent work with a client that you're trying to demonstrate empathy or challenges or a variety of appropriate probes. Well, you could do it with a ideal master model, and then people would watch the videotape or the DVD that has the excellent counselor on, and they'd learn. But what I've always done in a more creative fashion is include myself as model doing things that might not be all that appropriate, and then discuss what is the impact of not so perfect counseling. And in most things, empathy is an example. If there were truly an empathy response that was perfect, we wouldn't want to use it because what would happen is we'd say, you're feeling really anxious about whatever the content is that relates to that anxiety. And the client would look at us, and if it was perfect, they'd say, oh, that's exactly right. And that would be it.
And that would be the end.
But we want the non-perfect attempt at an empathy response that allows the person to say, yeah, I am anxious, but it's more than that. I'm also feeling really suspicious of what my boss has been saying lately, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
And the perfect, the mistakes, the role plays that demonstrate a variety of, not really errors, but at least non-perfect responses are the kinds of creativity I think that often is important for students. And then there's more, I guess, further out kinds of things that I have for years directly incorporated in the practicum sequence a variety of stories, some of which are more directly related to counseling, some of which, well, they're all related to counseling, but some of which are directly related with counselors in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Others are about animals or variety of situations that would, on first read, not seem to have anything to do with the process of counseling. But then, as you think about it and talk about it and wrestle with it, you realize that these stories are making direct, immediate points about what one needs to learn as a counselor.
That's if I could pause for just one second.
Yeah.
That's really one of the reasons I was looking so mm-hmm. forward to talking to you is in the past I've had the opportunity to hear one of your allegorical uh-huh. stories about the coyote counselor. And I have used it mm-hmm. with my students, and I have found them to be not only taken by the story, enthralled, you know, really involved as it's read, but also to one group of students actually named themselves the Coyote Counselors.
Yeah.
and so it becomes, the story sticks with them. There's something yeah. about story and allegory that is powerful.
Very much so. The whole storytelling idea, if you talk to somebody who really does storytelling, is that it is the thought that oftentimes you get beyond the person's, and it's really underneath the person's defenses with the story, and it allows the point to be made and actually more integrated in the person's thinking than just giving the information. So that it's like a stealth bomber. It goes under the radar and makes its necessary contact with the target before one even realizes what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, I have now 30 different stories, each related directly to counseling. And what I've done in the practicum sequence, which is a 30-week sequence of coursework, essentially two semesters, mm-hmm. or in actuality at the University of Cincinnati it's three quarters. Each week they read one of these stories, and there's a tie-in from one story to the next with a story on top of stories. Each story is told in the context of a somewhat mysterious storytelling counselor educator type person who's talking directly to two beginning counseling students. And I think what's really neat about it is the beginning counseling students, as one might expect, ask the same questions as the students who are reading the stories in class. So that as they critique these stories, and every couple of weeks they turn in a short each student turns in a short two-page critique of the stories that they've read. And actually the stories appear each week on Blackboard, so that mm-hmm. as the course continues, there's a new story every week. And the two students in the stories then ask the questions, and then the critiques, what happens is that the students are saying, wow, I just can't believe this story was just came at the right point, because I was just wondering about that in the context of the work that I'm doing as a student in my practicum right now. And I totally agreed with what Michael was saying, that it didn't seem to so on. And the questions then are responded to by the teacher most often with a story. And then they have this little wrap-up at the end of each story where there's a few more questions and a few more answers. And they're throughout the 30 stories, they're trying to figure out who Jeremiah, the storyteller, is, and they pick up little clues and talk about that, and he slips out the back door or something when they are almost going to figure out who he is, and they just have this meeting in the basement of a in a rather dark basement of an old church that's nearby their campus, and they go and get together each Tuesday evening and talk about counseling. And there's a variety of themes that run throughout the stories. One is clearly, again and again, the stories, what Jeremiah is saying about the stories is repeating the underlying theme is you got to take care of yourself. That as a counselor, first, one needs to be paying attention to ourselves in order to be most helpful in dealing with and wrestling with the kinds of concerns and issues that clients are going to bring to us. So that's an ongoing underlying theme. But on top of that, there's discussion of empathy and discussion of challenges and how to explain most effectively what it is that's going on in counseling to a client in a beginning counseling session. There are stories that relate to ethics issues that might, I don't even know if there's the internal thinking of the counselor and how that can be helpful in or difficult as a counselor in working with a client. There's trying to think of some of the later ones. The magic of counseling is not in the strategies and the specifics of the techniques. What the magic is in the relationship between the client and the counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular story is the one that actually, for my practicum class, that's the one that starts practicum. And I don't know, should I give you a real, real brief run through of the story? I think I can do it really quickly.
That would be great, absolutely.
Okay. It's the the wizard's secret. Well, the wizard's secret is about this fellow that lives in the medieval times, grows up near this huge castle, finds out that the castle has a counseling program, applies, goes to the counseling program, starts his counseling work, not the most outstanding student. He's very, very a golden-hearted type of person. He's a very wonderful kind of guy, but he's not the smartest. He does okay in his courses, but then he gets to at the end of his pre-practicum, and he realizes, I'm going to have to see real clients now, and I'm going to be responsible for people who actually have concerns, and he freaks out. He gets so anxious, he doesn't know what to do. He's going to have to drop out of the program.
Mm.
But he goes to see the wizard, who happens to have a office in the castle, and the wizard gives him a hat. Well, he assumes, of course, that it's a magic hat. And the wizard says, you know, whenever you get into trouble, just listen really carefully and really focus on thoughts, images, ideas, and that will help you through that situation. So he listens to his magic hat, and he just blossoms as a counselor and becomes one of the most respected counselors in the whole kingdom. And one day, he loses his hat. Oh, it's terrible. He's right back to where he had been at the very start, panicked, anxious, overwhelmed, but somehow he manages to get through his morning, and before he's canceled the afternoon, he knows he's going to be awful. But he reflects on the morning, and he didn't do too badly. He had a good session, and another session that was actually even better. He came to some insightful understandings of the client, and then one that was really, really great. But the two that he found really positive, he realized he'd kind of blurted some things out that he never would have blurted out if he, you know, had really stopped and thought, well, I don't have my magic hat on. But he did, and the sessions went really well. So he then immediately proceeds to find the wizard again and ask what's going on and how could this have happened, that I had sessions that really weren't all that terrible and my magic hat's gone. Well, the wizard says, you know, I have to be honest with you. there wasn't really a magic hat. And then at that point, the counselor just goes ballistic. He jumps up and down, screams, "How could you have deceived me? You said there was magic in my counseling, and there wasn't any magic. You said that hat was the magic that I had in my counseling, and you've just been lying to me all this time. This is horrible. This is awful." And then finally he calms down, and the wizard turns to him and says, "You know what? I think you misheard what I said. I didn't say there was no magic in your counseling. What I said is, there's no magic in the hat. Every time you turned and listened and focused on what the hat was telling you, you were listening to yourself. The magic in your counseling, and it's there, is a magic that's in you." And then from that story, this is the opening story in the first pre-practicum class, from that story is the extension that if the magic's in you, and you're the key ingredient in that counseling process, you know what? You got to keep care of yourself. You really have to provide direct effort towards self-care. And as a graduate student with a life, could be you have a part-time job, could be you might even have a full-time job. You certainly have family, you certainly have friends. You have demands. And you need to make sure that you're one of the priorities in terms of what you're doing day by day, week by week. So you got to take care of yourself. And then this is part of the subsequent class is, and I've taken out the magic hat and put it on during the course of the story, of course. And I say, you know, I'm going to wear a hat every single week in class.
And you are or are not?
I am going to.
Okay.
So every week I come in with a different hat. I've got plenty of hats. And the hat is to remind you, week by week, you've got to take care of yourself. So every week I come in with a different hat, and it's usually a funny hat, and I've got all kinds of weird hats. Mickey Mouse with blinking lights and pirate's hats and on and on. And each week I then wear a hat, and that then is a reinforcement of the underlying principle of, you know, keep in mind, you got to take care of yourself. So that story I tell that story in class.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the series of stories, the 30 stories, it's actually the very last story, which is really kind of interesting, is that they read it again as the 30th of the 30 stories. And it wraps up the year of discussion between Jeremiah and Emma and Michael over the course of their work on Tuesday evenings at the old church.
Wonderful, wonderful. I heard a couple things. One is that first story about the wizard is sets the frame for the whole sequence of courses, as you said, the frame for self-care and and then being open to ideas. I also hear that you, in your stories, use humor and metaphor. And and earlier you also said that you use actual kinds of questions that counselors in training would be wondering about.
Right.
So all the way from the extreme fantasy to the more real life kinds of questions.
Yeah. Although the stories are more the fantasy, that's the response to the questions. That they're typically, the students are asking things like, well, how do I start a counseling session? Or my practicum class was talking about challenges, and I'm not really sure, what do I do to make a challenge? It feels kind of uncomfortable to point out to a client a discrepancy they're making. Or, you know, the code of ethics says that a sexual relationship with a client is absolutely prohibited. Why would that even be in there? Why would anybody ever think that clients and counselors aren't going to have a sexual relationship. Why would that even appear in a code of ethics, et cetera? These kinds of questions that are not at all unlikely that and actually more the other way, that almost for sure that at one point or another a student is going to ask. And they just come up one after the other over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes then Jeremiah responds with a allegorical kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally it's more like a lecture with a variety of illustrations of counselor-client discussion, interaction, and talking within the story about a particular point that he's making.
Mm-hmm.
But there, each of them has an element of a story, although some are more, much more allegorical kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what kinds of reactions you've gotten from students over the years since you've been using this.
Typically, the reaction is something along the lines of, you know, I really enjoy these stories more than the textbooks because they're just, because they're easy to read and they directly address the kinds of thoughts and questions that I have, I really appreciate the opportunity to read these, and I just really appreciate that they're so different from what you typically have in an academic course.
Mm-hmm.
And it is different. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, in a sense, I don't think it is that different because I think the issues, maybe with the self-care theme taken out, that's the emphasis on self-care in the stories on an ongoing basis probably is a little different than any textbook. But other than that, the kinds of areas that are addressed are going to be exactly the things that you would hope a practicum student in a beginning master's program would be learning.
Mm-hmm.
But the format is 100% different.
Mm-hmm.
And as a story, or one story after another, it can't be the same as an organized, logically put together textbook. So it, in that sense, it is very different.
Mm-hmm. And I, as you're talking today, I'm thinking that it, one of the strengths possibly of using story in this way is that it gives an opportunity for the students to distance themselves a bit from their, maybe their level of anxiety or just their discomfort with unknowing, and be able to examine it from a different perspective and then take it in as their own.
Right.
That's very valuable for students to be able to do that.
And a lot of times another piece of feedback that I get is, I didn't realize other people were thinking the same thing. That, yeah, that's something I've been wondering about.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was valuable just to know that there are others who might have that same kind of question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so we'll have some listeners that are counselor educators listening to this. We'll also have students listening. So I wonder what recommendations you might have for counselor educators who want to either increase their use of creativity or storytelling or begin, even just from the beginning.
To begin in terms of using more creativity, I think, well, one of the things I'd really like to accomplish is to have these stories available in a published form for anybody that wants to use them, and of course that'd make it really easy to incorporate the storytelling idea within a counseling training program. But to get to just encourage somebody to do to make more use of creativity in their classes, I think I'd start with, and it's probably something most counselor educators would say, well, of course, that's something that I do, start with the idea of bringing in direct illustrations, role plays, demonstrations into the classroom about any of the important issues that the class is intended to convey. So in a supervision class, for example, we regularly do role plays with supervisees, hypothetical supervisees, maybe who are a little bit exaggerated, but who have the same kinds of issues and present the same kinds of concerns that a supervisee might present to a supervisor. And in class, it's not, I try to avoid the anxiety of putting somebody on the spot and say, well, here's this difficult supervisee, you deal with them and then we'll critique you. I mean, that's got to be something that would immediately shoot up your stress and make things very uncomfortable. But what I have done for years is, in that kind of a role play, we get a difficult supervisee. It might have been something that comes out of a discussion in class, that these are the kinds of issues this supervisee is presenting. So I say, okay, I'll be the supervisee. Let's have a volunteer to be the supervisor, except it's not a supervisor, it's the spokes supervisor. So everybody in the class, all the rest of the class, are really the supervisor. And the person who sits up in front and actually makes the responses is just the spokesperson for the rest of the class. So the supervisee will start with whatever the issue is, and the class will discuss, well, what might be a most helpful next response as supervisor to these kinds of issues in the supervisee. Then that response is delivered by the spokes supervisor, and then they continue on with the role play. But I think that that's kind of creative, and it's creative in the sense that you can take that and build in virtually any direction that is most appropriate to the issues that your particular class is thinking about, worrying about, wrestling with during that week. But the solutions on, well, where to go next, all of it's going to be in there in that discussion. May not be that the spokes counselor actually makes the particular intervention that one student recommends, but the discussion will include the creative possibilities for all of the participants in the class, some of which will be directly involved in the response and some of which won't, but talking about it, thinking about it, will do that.
So I just heard one more thing as you were talking about one of the benefits is that I think also students must benefit by witnessing your use of creativity and having the opportunity to work on theirs in a sense, so that they may trust themselves more, try various things with clients and supervisees.
Yeah.
But I think it must encourage their own use of creativity and some more freedom in working with people.
Yeah, really, so often in our field of counseling, there is no truly wrong answer. It's a variety of answers, some of which one would be more likely to try, some of which one would be less likely to try, but there's really none that you could say, absolutely, that's totally off the wall and inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, I'm sure there are some. They aren't the possibilities that are generated in
class.
That
come up, right, in class.
I mean, there got to be some things that, yeah, you have to say, that's totally wrong. but people in the courses in counseling don't come up with things that are totally inappropriate.
No.
Really, related to creativity, I just happen to think that ongoing in the practicum classes, in the case presentations, always those involve directly pushing the student to be as creative and open to new ideas as possible. Because what they do is they prepare a couple of page description of the client and the issues and what's happened in the past and what they've done. And everybody reads those. And then there's a period of about 15 minutes of questions and answers. Not questions that the counselor necessarily would know the answer to, but things that people reading the case presentation think might be relevant to an understanding of the client. And I'd say probably slightly less than half of the time, the questions that people ask wouldn't be something that the counselor would necessarily know. So it's just, well, I don't really know how old his mother is, you know. How that would be relevant is not a question, because it's not a critiquing session. Now, where did you come up with that question? It's just a question. And mm-hmm. if you don't have the answer, you don't have the answer. And then that moves to conceptualization, which is really directly towards focused on a creative process where it's not going to be it is going to be brainstormed. It's not going to be evaluated. It's not going to be critiqued. Anything that you can come up with about a little piece, about a big piece, explanation of how this client has come to the point where he or she is experiencing the concerns and worries and issues that are expressed in this case description, go ahead and suggest that as a conceptualization, and then others will maybe use that as a springboard, but they're not going to say, oh, that couldn't be. They're just going to use that to come up with other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, the last 15 minutes of the case presentation is brainstorming on specific suggestions, recommendations, ideas for what the counselor can do with subsequent work in that context of the work with that client they've just presented. And that is, again, pushing them towards being as trusting of their creative energy as possible, that they can say whatever they want and they're not going to be criticized, and in fact, having said it out loud, they may even be willing to consider that as a possibility when working with one of their clients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's a wonderful learning for everybody else because they don't just get one point of view. They get 25, 30 different points of view on a given client and 35 or 40 different specific suggestions on what they could do next.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be consistent? No. Some of them would be totally inconsistent with one another, but that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They can work that kind of question out with their individual supervision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, so many, I hear so many strengths or opportunities available in using creativity.
Uh-huh.
Have you had some challenges? Are there challenges present as well?
Well, I'm sure there's got to be challenges in the process that I suppose one area of challenge, I'm thinking about the stories at the moment, is that some people aren't into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those who aren't into the story format still learn from reading them, but they just don't enjoy them in the same way as other students might. Is that a major problem? No, I'd love that everybody thought that the stories were great and that they really got into them and wanted to really reflect on them. But it really doesn't happen that way. But in any given class, no matter what you were doing, creative or not, there would be some students in the class that would have difficulty with it. Just as in my classes, which are very often discussion focused classes, that we do a variety of role plays illustrating ethical issues, for example, in one class. And that too is with a spokes counselor, not one counselor who's on the spot. But some students think that's absolutely the most beneficial kind of learning discussion that they can possibly have because they just really get involved. But there'd be others who, at the end of the class, would, on a course evaluation, say, you know, I wish you'd lectured for the second half of class rather than do the role plays, because I really would have liked to have heard specific organized content related to some of those ethical issues that
mm-hmm.
we talked about in the role play discussions at the second half class. So I suppose that's a challenge, that being creative, you have to be flexible to make sure that those who don't really get into a particular style of presentation still are getting what they need out of the class.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I'm going to suddenly start lecturing, but at least I can acknowledge what they need and maybe provide some resources or references or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always, I guess we can't always meet directly
yeah,
everyone's preferred style, but we provide opportunities.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm aware of, as I've gotten to listen to you today, that I feel energized about creativity. I feel a little more ready to jump out there and try some things. I'm also really looking forward to your stories coming out in print one day. Do you have a title for your book as it's
I think
being
the latest
prepared?
Title is Conversations with Jeremiah on the Magic of Counseling. Now, it's been changed from time to time. So I'm not sure that's the present title, but that's one of them that has surfaced over the last year or so.
Well, great. Yeah. Well, great. Well, we'll look for that. And any final thoughts here on Counselor Audio Source?
I probably should tell a story to finish.
That'd be great.
You like the Into the Thunderstorm story. So maybe I ought to mention that.
Okay.
The story is that, and again, this is an abbreviated version, that there's a part of the world that there aren't any humans. And in the midst of this jungle underbrush is a clearing, and the animals have set up a little house there. And it's one of those hot summer days where you know it's going to rain any minute. And out on the porch is the bear sitting in one of the rocking chairs overlooking the field, and he just falls asleep as the thunderstorm starts, and he just sleeps through the whole thing. He misses the whole thing. But the thunderstorm is so ferocious, so much lightning and noise, and it's just an incredible amount of water coming down all at once, that inside the house, the fox who lives there with the other animals hears this, and he wants to take a look. So he comes out and looks at the field, and it's just pouring. But surprisingly, he sees something out in the middle of the field. Oh, gosh, there's an animal out there in the middle of the thunderstorm with a light. Oh, it's a deer lying out in the middle of the field. Oh, I got to do something. Fox, being a very caring and compassionate animal, wants to bring the deer in. Thinks and thinks and thinks and runs inside the house and actually tries a couple of things. Gets some speakers and yells to the deer to come in, and then uses the speakers to try out something he's learned in a communications class about empathy. And he says, you're really scared out there in the field, aren't you, deer? Or something similar to that. Doesn't do anything. The deer just stays right out there. Horrible storm gets worse and worse. But the fox, even though really compassionate and really a caring animal, can't figure out what to do. There's not a solution to this. Can't get the deer in, so he gives up and goes back and takes his speakers back in, and he's had this set of lights he's taken out. He takes those back in. And just as he's coming in for the last round of carrying in his technology, the coyote is aware that it's been raining, and the coyote comes out to look and see what's going on. And same thing, except now the hail's coming down and splashing in the water on the field, and it's just horrible. But one of the lightning strikes lights it up just enough that he sees the deer out there too. But the coyote, unlike the very, very skillfully intelligent fox, he has this wisdom, sometimes called foolishness or courage, one or the other, that he just looks at the deer and plops right off the porch of the house all the way, one step at a time, all the way out to where the deer is in the middle of the meadow, and puts himself, the coyote himself, right in the middle of the danger of the thunderstorm, plops right down next to the deer, sits there, then waits for maybe 20 seconds or 30 seconds, and then just moves a slight bit to the side. And the deer comes just a slight bit and moves just a little bit back to where the coyote is. And little by little, one jump at a time, coyote first, coyote next, deer next, they work their way eventually back to the house and to safety and to the warmth of the fire. And the important piece of all this is that there are counselors. Well, first, there aren't counselors who are bears, unfortunately. That the bear totally fell asleep, missed the whole thing, didn't even know there was a deer in the field. Well, actually, counselors aren't going to be bears. The bears of the world won't be counselors. They'll be doing something else. But there are a lot of fox counselors, and they are. There's nothing that we should say about fox counselors that's negative, because they do have their hearts in the right place. They do have every reason to be proud of the work that they do, and they do good work because they're caring, they're compassionate, they attempt to help clients move in the directions they need to move in their life. But they're also just a little bit distant, that there's this piece of, I want to be helpful to you, but just protect me, protect myself a little bit. They're not going to jump right into the thunderstorm. The coyotes, or the coyote counselors, are those who I would personally really want to advocate, because there is a risk that any of us take in really getting into the world of a client in trouble. That we can't sit with a client for an hour who is depressed, who is anxious, who is stressed, and feel just as chipper and on top of things and as happy as we were before we started that session. So every time we go into directly dealing, listening, exploring, empathizing with a troubled client, we're moving into the thunderstorm, and we are putting ourselves at risk to some extent. We're not going to be quite as happy as we were before we started. But that's the kind of counseling that really makes a difference. We can sit with a person, we can be there with the person, we can experience their world, and little by little, maybe take a little jump here and they'll follow us, a little jump there and they'll follow us, until they're in a place where their life experience is more positive, more comfortable, and scary for us, but coyote counseling is, at least in my view, the way to go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you from CounselorAudioSource.net for your time, and I don't want to break the moment here. I love that story.
You've just heard an interview with Jeff Yeager of the University of Cincinnati by our associate editor, Teresa O'Halloran, on the topic of creativity in counselor education. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at CounselorAudioSource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.